What's good, New York? You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI, listener-funded radio, 99.5 FM. I'm Jack Devine, and I'm here today with my co-host, Lee Zishi. Today, we'll be covering the headlines from a socialist analysis, and then we'll be talking about the Green New Deal and what a Green New Deal could mean for New York State's energy plan. We'll be talking with Kelly Roche, who is in the studio with us today. And before we dive in, let's fully introduce Lee, who, if you listened last week, called in from a protest live at Peekskill.
Hey, everybody, and you almost got my name right. It's Zishi. It was very, very close. Fishy with the Z.
I knew he was going to make the mistake.
I'm very excited to be here co-hosting today and talking about a Green New Deal. I've been working on stopping anti-fracking infrastructure and fracking for a very long time, which is kind of how I ended up supporting democratic socialists. So be careful, parents. You know, if your kids are doing anti-fracking organizers, they will definitely end up socialist because they will see that the way the capitalist system works right now and the way that our energy system works right now is a lot of polluting of communities and polluting of the planet and all those external costs being passed on to us while rich billionaires like, you know, Rex Tillerson of ExxonMobil make all the money. And we're joined today by Kelly Roche, who I have the great fortune of knowing through the Energy Democracy Alliance. She knows more about renewable energy than anybody I know. And you're all so lucky to get to hear from her today. So thanks so much for being here, Kelly.
Thank you, Lee. Kelly Roche, as Lee said, getting over a little laryngitis, so pardon my voice. I organize with the New York Energy Democracy Alliance, which is a coalition of 25 member groups all over New York State, base building organizations, organizations working at the state level on both policy and programmatic or project development. My specialty is in particular in community owned and shared solar arrays or solar farms. And I'm also a member of the DSA Libertarian Socialist section of the New York area.
I agree. I mean, if you want to dive into, you know, what maybe libertarian socialism is, because it's kind of just one caucus within a broader array of what, you know, the Democratic Socialists of America are doing. We're a Big Ten organization with a lot of different people who have different ideological perspectives, but we're all united around, you know, democratizing the economy, our society, taking away power from, you know, the capitalist class, the ruling class, the people who own everything. And we want to, you know, not just like spread the wealth, we want people to own the wealth. So if you want to dive into like, you know, what brought you to that vision of the world, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. I also define myself as a municipalist, so someone who's interested in creating change from, in particular, the grassroots hyper-local level through direct democratic initiatives. So also have founded and organized with a group called Symbiosis and work with Fearless Cities North America as well, with some folks may be familiar with our allies of DSA, and are working at sort of the continental level to coordinate some of these local efforts. So basically matching the hyper-local community assemblies, community-owned renewable energy projects, which we'll get into a little bit more, mutual aid projects with the sort of systemic change level through an approach that is often known as dual power.
That sounds great. And I think it really highlights, you know, how DSA and, you know, our coalition partners were fighting for socialism on multiple fronts. It's not, you know, I spoke about this last week, but there's kind of a general misconception about what socialism is. It's like, oh, it's the government is going to take control of your life. But no, it's the opposite. Actually, the government right now under capitalism has immense control of your life. They can throw you in a cage. They can, you know, not just the government, but your boss can fire you. Or, you know, if you work for the government, they can end your job. But socialism is not about the government taking control of everything. It's about the people seizing control of the means that provide them their life. That people are not disempowered, but rather they're empowered in their workplace and their home and in every faction of their life.
Yeah, and I mean, I think when it comes to energy, that's, you know, one of the most exciting things, you know, this idea that, you know, we can own our own energy. And I'm really excited that we're going to be talking a lot more about that today.
Yeah, I mean, energy is something that there already are like partial plans out there with public ownership, and they work better than the privately owned models. So we're not just, you know, fighting for something that's out of thin air. We're talking about things that really exist and we need to build upon if we're going to survive this, what is an impending climate apocalypse. You know, the report came out this past week that like all the fish are going to be dead within in the oceans within like 20 years. And a lot of people survive off of eating fish. So that's just one aspect of a crisis that we can only meet by organizing together on the ground and building power for people. And so, yeah, I'm really excited that we're going to dive into what the Green New Deal is about, what community-owned energy could be about. But before we do that, we just want to, you know, give a little recap of what's going on here in New York, as well as kind of internationally through labor struggles. Before diving in, we're going to first do a little of the New York headlines before going into a clip about the strikes in Los Angeles. But first, I just wanted to mention how now with the Democrats in control of both the New York State Assembly and the State Senate, the legislature on Monday passed a series of bills aimed at electoral reform. This has included early voting, mail-in voting, pre-registration of 16 to 17-year-olds, and a consolidated primary schedule. Missing from the package was the restoration of voting rights to people on parole and automatic voter registration, as well as flexibility for voter switch parties. I think these are really key issues that organizers on the ground should be pushing for to make sure that this is not the final step of you know, opening up the democratic process in New York, but really expanding it further. And at the same time, this past week, Mayor de Blasio announced some new initiatives that could really expand the public sphere and, you know, the commons within New York, a plan for comprehensive health care for all New Yorkers, which would include New York's undocumented residents, as well as support for Jemani Williams' bill to guarantee 2 weeks of paid leave and a program to give free eyeglasses to all kindergartners and first graders. You know, these are not the kind of the great solutions that we need long term, but I think they are steps in the right direction, and that, you know, people on the socialist left and maybe people who call themselves progressives that are inclined to socialist politics should be happy at these steps, but we need to fight and push for more. And how you push for more is getting out in the streets, you know, taking ownership of your workplace and letting the, you know, your bosses know that they can't do anything without you. And so to show the power of that, we're going to go to a clip from UTLA and their amazing strike out in Los Angeles.
So we're out here, day two of the strike. Do you think we can win?
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. And in order to win, what does that look like? What are the schools that you think Los Angeles deserves?
We need more community schools with smaller class sizes, more nurses and librarians, and pulling our community resources together to give the kids a school and classrooms that can actually meet their needs.
Great. Thanks so much in solidarity.
I think what's really, really critical about these strikes is, one, obviously they're fighting for the wages that they deserve. And, you know, in our society, we really devalue the work that is like primarily done by women, which is outrageous because I think it's pretty clear to anyone with a thinking mind that teachers and nurses and moms do more critical work for our society than corporate bureaucrats who sit around in air conditioning offices all day, or, you know, someone like Jeff Bezos who makes the amount that a teacher does all year in probably like 5 seconds. So I think what these strikes are really critical is they're not just fighting, though, for their wages. They're also fighting for the community. They're fighting against privatization, in which, you know, real estate developers and hedge funds seize control of our public institutions. And they're fighting for, you know, lower class sizes. It's ridiculous that like up to 50 students in a single class in California. So it's great to see over 30,000 California teachers in Los Angeles out on strike. And this is a, you know, part of a series of developments that began actually not just this past year, but in Chicago in 2012, kind of a real new movement for like social movement unionism, where the teachers are working with the students and the parents to take back public education, expand it, and empower the workers even more. And in this 11 months alone, after really strikes being dormant in American society, just among teachers, there have been over 400,000 teachers on strike. And I think this is part of a, you know, broader international movement of socialist feminism, where you have these the massive strikes in India in the past week, where 150 million to 200 million people went on strike, kind of following the lead of Indian women who filled the streets the week before, you know, declaring that they are worth something, that the Modi's you know, nationalistic, patriarchal mode of domination has to be put to an end. And then also you have Bangladesh. You have 50,000 textile workers who are mainly women and children also out in the street fighting for their rights, their, you know, fighting for the fact that they deserve a living wage and they deserve to be empowered in their society.
Yeah, and since we're talking about a Green New Deal, I would just like to, you know, kind of give a shout out to all the coal workers who were some of the first people who led strikes in our country. It's because of those workers that we have a 5-day work week, that we have, you know, the hours that we have. And we'll definitely get into this more, but, you know, I think a lot of people who they accuse environmentalists of not caring about fossil fuel workers, and that's not the case. You know, we wouldn't have a lot of these amazing things, these labor laws that we have, without coal workers who went on strike and were actually, you know, fired upon by the Rockefellers back in the, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s. So, you know, we do care about the coal workers and we care about the fossil fuel workers. So you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 and streaming online at WBAI.org. Today we're talking about a Green New Deal, and our governor, Governor Cuomo, recently announced that he supports a Green New Deal. You can't see, but I'm putting that in air quotes. So let's now go and hear Governor Cuomo's announcement on a Green New Deal.
The federal government still denies climate change, remarkably turning a blind eye to their own government's scientific report. I've never seen anything like it, and we've seen a lot from this federal government. But they put out a report that says one thing, and then they publicly deny it. But denial is not a life strategy, and we will never solve a problem that we refuse to admit. We know what we must do. Now we have to have the vision, the courage, and the competence to do it. New York must be the most progressive state in the nation, moving to renewables. There is real economic growth potential, and New York will launch the Green New Deal to make New York's electricity 100% carbon neutral by 2040, and ultimately eliminate the state's entire carbon footprint.
So that was Governor Cuomo. He made that announcement recently before the holidays when he was announcing his 2019 justice agenda. He reiterated some of those same statements today during his State of the State address. So, Kelly, you've been doing work in the renewable space for a very long time. How has Governor Cuomo done so far on renewable energy?
Yeah, this is definitely not the first time we've seen sweeping plans or statements from the governor, but have seen a lot of failure in the actual implementation. So we've seen a policy called the REV, that's a REV, which is around reforming our energy vision, which came out several years ago. But we are still only at 5% wind and solar for our energy sourcing for New York State, which is pretty pitiful after several years of that policy being in place. And we see also just a lot of ideology of capitalism and quote-unquote market animation behind the approach of the governor's administration, having a quote-unquote energy czar that is a former Goldman Sachs executive, number of Goldman Sachs execs in the sort of core energy team of the Cuomo administration. So a lot of failure to deliver on anything that's sort of beyond a reformist vision of capitalist energy structure, where corporate utilities are still playing a giant outsized role, communities are not being brought to the table or consulted, and even small kind of businesses and local solar developers are being left out of the picture.
And it seems like particularly absurd to have like a market approach and to something, you know, dealing with an issue like climate change and really the need to like liquidate the fossil fuel industry. It needs to be, it can't exist really within 12 years if human civilization is going to avoid basically a genocidal path to either complete destruction or surviving in a world that I don't think any of us want to live in. And the idea that like all these investors who have put so much money into fossil fuels are just going to willingly, you know, let their money evaporate just goes against the nature of how capitalism has operated for 500 years. They never let themselves be liquidated. There is always struggle to confront the people who own, you know, destructive private property.
Yeah, the administration has really kind of tiptoed around that issue or structural change writ large, which is very frustrating for definitely local organizers.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, that Governor Cuomo has been doing is not, you know, getting rid of the fossil fuel industry. He's actually approving a lot of frack gas infrastructure. I found it really interesting that he talked about this denialism when calling out Republicans, because, you know, they deny climate change. But what we have is a lot of Democrats who recognize that climate change is a problem, but then have kind of bought into this fossil fuel industry myth that frack gas is a bridge fuel. And so we have Governor Cuomo has approved he banned fracking in 2014, which was a really big deal. And he only did that because there was a mass movement that picketed him everywhere he went. You know, he couldn't have a birthday party without fracktivists outside asking him to ban fracking. And so he recognized that there is a problem with fracking, but then has continued to approve frack gas infrastructure like power plants, the CPV power plant in Orange County, the Cricket Valley power plant. These are massive, massive power plants that will be burning a lot of gas. So we said that this wasn't safe for us, but we're going to be fracking people in Pennsylvania. And all along that transmission line, from the wellheads to the pipelines, we have leaking methane, which is actually more potent in a short time frame than carbon, than coal and oil. So Governor Cuomo talks a big game, but he actually has a lot of denialism in his own rhetoric.
And I think a lot of that is tied into, you know, how much, you know, people like Governor Cuomo they're sponsored by maybe not specifically fossil capital in the same way, but having so many ties to hedge funds and finance capital in general really corrupts the way that, you know, a politician is going to operate. Because the way that a huge portion of the so-called economic recovery that hasn't really existed for most people since 2008, maybe other than having to work 80 hours a week to survive, has been massive amount of cheap money invested into fracking. And it's so hedge fund managers are really tied in with this method of production. And at the same time, so they need to, you know, have the government continue to allow this to happen so that they can maybe get a return on their investment, even though fracking is mostly not a profitable industry. So the entire political economy is built around these really destructive mechanisms. And that's why it's so important to confront it on the ground and every front, and that we can't just rely on platitudes from politicians like Governor Cuomo. We have to really organize to build an alternative economic structure.
Yeah, I mean, and also Governor Cuomo's best friend, Joseph Prococo, is going to jail for taking money from frack gas, from a frack gas power plant. And his former campaign manager, Maggie Moran, was a lobbyist. So there is also some really direct ties from Governor Cuomo. And, you know, people recognize that. And that's why New Yorkers have actually been, anytime he's in New York City, they are there picketing him, continuing on this thing that the fracking movement started, asking him to stop frack gas infrastructure. So we're going to listen now to a clip from one of those pickets.
Climate, will you stop all fossil fuel infrastructure in New York State? We are in a climate crisis.
We are acting on climate. You're going to hear it in the speech, and you're going to like what you hear.
Will you stop all fossil fuel infrastructure? Will you pass the Climate and Community Protection Act?
That was Patrick Houston of New York Communities for Change. I talked with Patrick this week about a specific project that is proposed off the coast of New York, the Williams Frack Gas Pipeline. It's one of the pipelines people are opposing. So let's hear now from Patrick Houston from New York Communities for Change.
The Williams Frack Gas Pipeline is a proposal from Williams Company to build a 23-mile pipeline that would stretch through New York City Harbor and connect existing pipelines in the Far Rockaways and in New Jersey. But the pipeline will carry fracked gas that's being, a lot of it, from Pennsylvania for use here in the New York City and possibly in the region around New York City. We're concerned about the project for a lot of reasons. One, the project is going to be very costly, and Williams Energy projects it's going to be about $1 billion for the project, the cost that ultimately is going to get passed on to customers of National Grid. So that's customers here across the city who are going to have to be paying that bill. If anything, at this time, we need to be moving off of dirty fracked gas infrastructure like the Williams Pipeline into clean, renewable sources of energy. The pipeline is dangerous. It's dangerous for reasons of it would have to be laid into the seabed of the harbor, and that's going to churn up a lot of old toxins that have been sitting on the bay floor for decades. So it's dangerous for those reasons, and that's going to endanger beachgoers, that's going to endanger marine life. It's also dangerous because, as we know, we are in a climate crisis, and aiming towards the development of gas infrastructure is more steps in the wrong direction. That fracked gas is going to, it's methane, and that is even more potent than carbon dioxide.
And Governor Cuomo just recently announced that this kind of idea of a Green New Deal for New York. So what you're saying is this pipeline doesn't fit into this vision that Governor Cuomo has laid out. What have people been doing? What have organizers been doing to get Governor Cuomo's attention on this issue? And what can he do about it?
If I can first zoom out a little bit and just speak to Cuomo's use of the language Green New Deal. So as many listeners may know, as many people may know, Justice Democrats, Sunrise Movement, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have ramped up in a serious way the campaign around the national set of ideas, very strong ideas, and policy proposals of the Green New Deal. It's gaining a lot of traction. So it's important to recognize that national proposal is very ambitious. It's very comprehensive. It has a lot of environmental justice and equity standards deeply built into it. Now, there's others that are beginning to use that same language, and Cuomo is one of them who's co-opting the language of Green New Deal. But in reality, what he's putting forth as a Green New Deal falls far short and is nowhere near the scale, at least on the state level, of what the national proposal is. There is a lot more that Governor Cuomo needs to do to get New York State where it needs to be on climate. And one of the things he can do is deny the many projects across this state, the fossil fuel projects that are either proposed or in the works across this state. And the Williams Pipeline is one of them. And so what we're working on is making sure that Governor Cuomo hears from people across this state, especially across this city when it comes to the Williams Pipeline. So not a lot of people who will be affected by the more toxins in the water. Not a lot of people that will be affected by the increased cost. Not a lot of people who are going to be affected by climate change writ large, by rising sea levels, by the next Hurricane Sandy. Not a lot of people in this city who are going to be affected by climate change and by this pipeline know that it's even on the docket. And so we're trying to spread the word, make sure people are aware about this pipeline and are contacting their elected officials, be it their council member to express their concern about this dangerous and dirty pipeline, their state representatives, whether it's their assembly members or their senators. So we're trying to make sure that we're spreading the word, that people are getting engaged, and that they have the help that they need to contact their elected officials.
Hi, you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI listener-funded radio 99.5 FM. That was our interview with Patrick Houston from New York Communities for Change about the Williams Pipeline and the need to organize against it. So, Kelly, we've been talking a lot about, you know, criticizing Cuomo's plan and really the necessity for action and, you know, to deal with climate change. What would a democratic socialist energy plan look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. So in the sort of just transition framework, we talk a lot about stopping the bad, which is a lot of this incredible work that folks are doing on the ground, but also then building the new and replacing sort of our energy system that we see now, I think can take a few different fundamental approaches. One is being obviously renewable. We don't have the certainly luxury of time and in mitigating the ecological crisis that we face. So committing to true renewable energy infrastructure, not bridge gas infrastructure. also being equitable. So don't want to create a situation in which these renewables are only accessible to the wealthiest, continuing to perpetuate the system of inequality that we see under capitalism. And then my sort of two favorite components of a sort of REAL, this acronym energy plan that the New York Energy Democracy Alliance has advanced, are being accountable and local. I'm from the New Jersey Shore. Was there through Hurricane Sandy, and we still have not fully recovered. I drive by a lot of areas on the shore in Oceanport, Seabright, Asbury Park, where those properties just have not been rebuilt or have been reclaimed by capitalist developers now that the price of oceanfront property is quite high. So one sort of key to mitigating that is having an energy system that is resilient and that can be sort of islanded or responsive to these climate events that we're going to see more and more of and are already seeing more and more of. And that localism also really speaking to a transformation in our fundamental politics, being where the accountability comes in. So creating a direct democratic local energy system wherein people are able to participate in decisions about where their energy comes from, are able to partake in the energy system in a way in which, whether through cooperatives where they may participate kind of in a sense of being a part owner of an energy system like a community solar farm or array in the city, spread across a couple rooftops, or some other economic structure that, you know, we're still working to envision what all the possibilities could be. But I think, you know, as we've talked about, from everything from the strikes that we're seeing to the Green New Deal, really thinking about how there can be fundamental changes in our systems and the ways in which we approach politics and care and community, which are so essential to mitigating the ecological crisis in addition to the technology.
Yeah, you talked a little bit about, you know, what people would choose. I don't think anybody wants to choose to heat their home or power their home with frack gas. You know, knowing what we know about fracking, it's not like, great, I want to frack someone in PA to heat my house. But right now, there's really not a choice because you have big utilities like Con Ed and National Grid pushing for more gas because that's their business model, right? And same with energy. Their business model is to deliver you a product. But, you know, under a Green New Deal and eco-socialism, we could be producing our own energy on our homes. We could be heating our own homes with geothermal and air source heat pumps, and then we don't need a national grid and those things. How have utilities kind of been, what's their role been sort of in as we lay out our new energy?
Yeah, New York, as too many people know, Con Edison rates are astronomical and are some of the highest in the country. But also, I think, most important thing to remember is that corporate utilities have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to maximize their profit, which is not in line with the idea of a democratic or eco-socialist ecological energy system. That's not the primary concern. So as long as those structures remain in place, we're looking at something that's deeply at odds with the transformation we need to create.
Yeah, that shareholder priority in the end will lead to immense violence and destruction. I mean, it already is, and it's just going to continue to accelerate unless we're able to, you know, fight on the ground and build upon some of these structures that already exist. Like there are, you know, some community solar groups that are building here in New York, but there also are like publicly owned energy systems that work more efficiently and, you know, have a better relationship with their people they provide energy to than privately owned, like shareholder-driven corporations.
And one of the groups that is doing the most on-the-ground work right now to fight for a Green New Deal is the Sunrise Movement. They're a movement of young people who have been working to get politicians to sign a no fossil fuel pledge. They grabbed the headlines recently by doing a massive protest in D.C. in Nancy Pelosi's office, and they were joined by Congresswoman, well, at the time she was Congresswoman-elect, but now Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And it's made this idea of a Green New Deal weigh in the headlines. Lots of people are talking about it. So I sat down with Nicole Catania, who's a 23-year-old organizer from Sunrise Movement here in New York City, and we talked a lot about what the Green New Deal could look like. So here's Nicole.
A big thing with Sunrise's theory of change is that you need two things. You need political power and you need people power. And you can't really have one without the other. And it was the first time I understood the people's ability to influence our politics and like what systemically needed to be changed in order to act on climate. So this past year, we got really involved with the No IDC campaigns. And we endorsed Zelnor Myrie in Brooklyn for state senate, Alessandro Biaggi. We endorsed Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for Congress. And we canvassed really hard for them. And yeah, that like journey with them from announcing their candidacy to petitioning for them to like getting them elected was really moving. And yeah, I think set us up for what's happened since.
And what did it feel like on election night to see these people that you knocked doors for and had conversations for win?
Oh, it was so special. On Sunrise Movement, New York's Instagram, there's this picture of us like cheering, and it was the moment Zelnor Myrie was the projected winner. And it was just like a group of us just like sobbing in a corner. It was like, wow, like these things that we did on a daily basis actually work and actually can change the state and change the country to where we need it to be.
You were in D.C. both of the big mobilizations?
Yep.
Okay. So what was that like? You know, you've been doing all this organizing here in New York City, and then to be with so many other people from across the country in the most powerful place in the world. What was that like?
That was wild. Yeah, the first one, it was like, there was 200 of us, the biggest thing I'd ever been a part of. And that was moving and scary. And the way when AOC came into the room, she just like gave us this hope that I don't think any of us had ever imagined. Like, it was beyond any of our expectations. And so when we went back to D.C. and then suddenly there were thousands of us, then that was, like, again, the biggest thing I'd ever been a part of. And, yeah, for the first time, I feel so hopeful that we can actually change the way climate change is both discussed and acted on in this country.
And you talked earlier about recognizing that there needs to be systematic change. And, you know, the proposal going forward is a Green New Deal. I think a lot of people still aren't sure exactly what that is. So can you explain a little bit about a Green New Deal is?
Yeah, so a Green New Deal basically is a sweeping overhaul of our economy off of fossil fuels and to 100% renewable energy with equity and justice at its core, and focusing on those communities who have in the past been left behind, who are on the front lines of climate change. And I think it all starts with getting corporate money out of politics, and in this case, fossil fuel money out of our politics. And part of like the select committee's push was that anyone sitting on the committee couldn't take fossil fuel money. And the reason like that's important is because if you're taking money from the industry, it's hard to then make legislation that takes money away from that industry.
And obviously, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has taken this on and is leading the charge. How have other New York Congress members responded?
A lot of our representatives are stuck in the status quo and are afraid to do what is actually necessary because it means alienating the people who have funded them into the positions they're in.
And so what's your plan for 2019?
So we lost the select committee fight. We're not getting our select committee on a Green New Deal. That's okay. So in March, Sunrise is going on tour, and it's called Road to a Green New Deal, and we're stopping around the country, bringing a Green New Deal to communities that haven't necessarily been like exposed to it so much. There's bipartisan support for this Green New Deal, but the majority of Americans don't actually know what it is, so we're going to try to change that and get on the ground for these new 2020 candidates who are already coming out and make the narrative not which Democratic candidate supports the Green New Deal, but who has the best vision for what a Green New Deal is. That's the narrative that we're going to make happen.
I think one thing that's really refreshing about what I've seen is so many like big green groups are so focused on calling out Republicans as climate change deniers that you have all these Democrats who recognize that climate change is real and then put forth plans that don't actually match yeah. that science. And it's an incredibly frustrating thing. And so like what, you know, what kind of standards do these plans have to meet?
Yeah, I think that outline that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had put forth for the Select Committee on a Green New Deal of what a Green New Deal would consist of is at least like the basis of what any of these Democratic candidates' Green New Deal should be based off of. If it's anything less, then it's not good enough.
And kind of funny enough, the Sunrise folks are actually some of the old people now in the room doing organizing around climate change, inspired by Greta Thunberg, who is a 15-year-old Swedish activist. Lots of New Yorkers, very young New Yorkers, have also joined the International Climate Strike. And so last week, I talked to 13-year-old climate activist Alexandria Villasenor, who every Friday is now at the UN demanding climate action. So let's hear from Alexandria.
I've been striking at the UN every Friday in solidarity with the 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg. And the reason I chose to strike at the UN is because this past year, the United Nations held the Conference of Parties, where the world leaders had failed to come to an agreement to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. And that will have catastrophic risks if we don't reduce those emissions. And so I hope to raise enough awareness that where people will start demanding actions from our world leaders.
And, you know, as a young person, how does it make you feel to see, you know, your elected officials and all these people that are in charge not really taking the actions they need to take?
It makes me very upset because it just shows that they will accept money over our future.
And do you think that a lot of young people are kind of recognizing that this system that we're inheriting is broken? Or what do you think kind of about the world that you're being handed right now?
It's definitely unfair, and I think a lot of kids realize that, no one was trying to protect our planet and that we ended up in this mess.
Yeah, and how does it feel that they put, you know, these fossil fuel interests, these billionaires, before you? I mean, you're 13. Like, Rex Tillerson's not going to be around, you know, that former head of Exxon. He's not going to be around when climate change happens, but you are.
It's definitely very upsetting to see, because when we're older, hopefully we will have the decisions to change it. But for now, all we can do is demand the action, but they still have been choosing the greed over the planet.
And what's kind of your vision? Like, what would you like to happen? And what would you like, you know, our energy system to look like, our world to look like?
I definitely want more policies being made to lower the emissions rate so we don't pass 1.5 degrees by 2030. That's one of the main things that I'm hoping to raise awareness to demand the action.
And that was our interview with the absolutely incredible 13-year-old climate activist, Alexandria Villasenor. I mean, considering when I was 13 years old, my greatest accomplishment was winning back-to-back video game national championships in NCAA football 2006, I am extremely impressed. And I think it's just, you know, another indication of the type of work that has to be done. It's amazing seeing these 13-year-olds going on strike, realizing that it's collective action, it's working together with other people. It's that seeing that your own interest is together linked with a common interest against a very small section of the population, like the billionaire class who own the wealth and exploit you every single day, realizing that we have to come together and fight against them to take their power away and, you know, share the power, share the wealth, and build kind of these working class, you know, institutions, organizations that really empower people in their day-to-day life. And when it comes to energy, to owning their own energy, participating in the energy, like decisions that they have to make, and, you know, coming together and fighting for something collectively. And it's really amazing to see someone so young realizing that.
Yeah, I was just hanging out at the mall at 13, really indulging in capitalism. And, that, you know, it wasn't making me really happy. I recognize in advance, you know, looking back on it. So, Kelly, you know, if people are feeling inspired now, you know, they heard from Sunrise Movement, they heard from these awesome young climate activists. What can New Yorkers do to shape New York's energy policy?
Yeah, I would say it's a critical moment. I think it pretty much will always be a critical moment given the scale of ecological destruction that we're facing down. But in particular, right now, we're on cycle for the development of a new statewide energy plan. A couple other things that tie into that, obviously, the Green New Deal proposal that the governor has put forth, co-opting the language of a Green New Deal proposal, but making that, you know, as expansive and deeply transformative as possible. And in addition to that, the sort of overall emissions or renewable transition goals that come along with that. So, you know, previously we're looking at 30% or 50% by 2030 renewable energy was the previous goal. Now we're looking at, I think, 100%. I think it's by 2040 is the current, or 2050. But we are, I think, looking to accelerate that. So
it needs to be faster.
Exactly. Right?
I mean, yeah. According to the vast majority of scientists.
Right. Right. There's not really a choice there. So absolutely engaging in processes with your local state representatives. There are definitely some folks who are great allies and agitators on this issue. And in addition to that, through the executive branch, there are always a host of call-in days and other opportunities to organize, whether directly at Cuomo's doorstep, whether he's in New York City or in Albany or elsewhere in the state. And I think in addition to that, just to kind of bring in the other kind of aspects of my analysis and that of the more libertarian wing of DSA, libertarian socialist wing, talking about building the local institutions right now that we will need to create that climate transition. So organizing, kind of, if you are in an apartment building, kind of tenant organizing where it's possible to create the demand for community solar energy, kind of organizing where you live, where you work, is, I think, a fundamental part of this. And certainly kind of piece of wisdom from Marx talks about how you can't write the recipes for the kind of kitchens or cook stores of the future, but I think building the kitchens is a big part of the work that we're tasked with right now. So building local assemblies and other kind of forums for people to voice and organize together, looking at alternative financial mechanisms like public banking. There's a huge public banking campaign in New York City right now that New Economy Project helped to spur. Many others have signed on to participate in, and looking at things also like participatory budgeting, where you get to actually take a direct role locally in allocating resources, which can create and facilitate some of these local energy renewable projects that are so key to this transition.
And if you build this kind of local democratic worker power and you create these institutions, it, you know, it gives people a lot more of a chance to fight back when capital inevitably strikes. Because, you know, we could pass a Green New Deal, but that's just the beginning. That's not when the fight ends. Because if we've seen throughout history, you know, we've had plenty of people elected to the state, you know, saying we're going to bring about all these great changes. People elected democratically, maintain their power democratically, and then overthrown and coup d'etats or undermined by capital strikes, by, you know, big businesses and financial interests moving their money away from, you know, certain countries that are trying to promote a, you know, quote unquote radical agenda, but radical really means dealing with the issue at the root. So, you know, when we pass legislation, it's not going to be enough. It's going to take building these institutions, fighting on the ground every day. So I think it's really great and really significant that, like, people are working on that level.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the kind of community support that we each need as well to continue in what is definitely long-term and really grueling fight. So definitely the sort of network of support that creates as well, just thinking at a care level and level of mutual aid is so critical.
Yeah, mutual aid was so key, like, after Sandy.
Yep.
Occupy Sandy came together, and they really were helping people when the state was, like, prioritizing the most valuable real estate over the, you know, people who are suffering most from the destruction wreaked by the hurricane, and the people least responsible. Poor people consume the least amount of energy, you know, almost all the energy in the world. I think, like, it's like 70%, or I might even be underestimating that, of fossil fuel contributions come from the most, like, the 100 most valuable companies, and, you know, people who fly in private jets. It's not the people who are going to suffer the most, who are the reason why this is happening. And I think it's really critical to factor that in, that, you know, we're not just, this is a fight that has to be, you know, from the bottom up, because if it's not, the top will make those people suffer.
Yeah, and just to say quickly, you know, private consumption behaviors and modifying those is all, you know, great and important and contributory and educational, but really these structural level changes that, you know, don't put the onus on already the most marginalized are sort of the fundamental thing we have to center.
Yeah, and we want to hear from your voices, too. What do you want to hear in a Green New Deal? What do you want our energy economy to look like? So you can call in at 212-209-2877. Again, that number is 212-209-2877. Yeah, let us know what you want to see in a Green New Deal. And, you know, I think a really cool thing that's happening now, too, in the conversation after, you know, the initial media splash was, how do we make sure that marginalized communities, these communities that were destroyed by Hurricane Sandy and all these different natural disasters, the people who have been living next to the power plants for so long, you know, how do we make sure that they're at the forefront of deciding what our new economy is going to look like?
Oh, we've got a caller live. You're live on WBAI radio.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing? My name is Oliver. I live in Manhattan. I'd just like to add something to this conversation. I'll make it as brief as possible. Something that has been missing in all the dialogue about the crisis, impending crisis of climate change, and that is added to that huge imminent crisis are many crises on this earth. Over 80,000 chemicals that people are absorbing, and it's in its chemicals and our foods and everything. The oceans, all the oceans are polluted with plastic and many toxins, et cetera, et cetera. The abuses of women and children on this earth. There are many impending crises all at the same time. And the only thing that is going to bring an end to all these crises will be an economic crisis, which I do believe, and there are many people, including economists and others, who believe is imminent. And that will be an economic crash, not a recession, a depression, that will cause all power brokers in the world, corporations and individuals, basically force them to their knees because they won't be able to stop it. And that's the only thing that will save humanity, because there are too many crises on this earth, including climate change, which will impact, much used word in our media today, all of humanity. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for that great call. And I think that's a really critical point that, you know, these issues are not separate. And yeah, and it's not just climate change and things are heating up, but, you know, animals have been going extinct at a extremely rapid rate. You're seeing, I mean, then this is more due to temperature, but you're going to have crops like die out in, you know, the center of the earth where most people live, leading to a massive refugee crisis. And then that in turn, you know, makes the, you know, what policies we have on immigration so critical. And that's why, you know, the right is getting so vicious and so centered around this wall, because they want to militarize the solution. They do have a climate change plan, and that is to allow or to kill the most vulnerable people in the world, to let them die or to stop them from coming over the border. So exactly. And I think you are right that there is a, you know, an economic crisis. I mean, I think we live under a constant economic crisis, but there is a catastrophe impending. I think if you look at, you know, global debt to production ratios and just kind of the ecological collapse is an economic collapse in and of itself. So I think it is really critical to understand that, but also to, while we're building up to these crises, you know, create the organizational structures that can fight against it. It's not going to just be automatic. Things can get worse. They always can. And it requires people coming together and fighting back and, you know, building real solutions in order to build a better, more democratic, socialist world.
Yeah, just to say, we already see that system crumbling in so many ways. But for instance, the one of the largest corporate utilities in the country in California, PG&E, filed bankruptcy. We're seeing that even these corporate utilities are not able to continue their business model under the threat that we're seeing, and also how they've been proven responsible for many of the wildfires and death and destruction that we've seen in California as well. So just to add to everything, I would second with that.
Yeah, and you have, you know, certain things like some of these economic things that people like Governor Cuomo brag about, you know, his Amazon deal. Well, Amazon's in a floodplain, you know, and most of our major cities are on coast for that mm-hmm. reason. So climate change is going to be a huge, you know, it's billions and billions of dollars of damages. And so, you know, for us to be spending $1 billion on the Williams pipeline right off the coast of the Rockaways, you know, near the communities that were the most devastated by Hurricane Sandy, it's just kind of insane to see so much money being spent going in the completely wrong direction.
Yeah, just spending money in a way that is not slowing the crisis, it's accelerating it, and just showing that the priorities are completely, I mean, I don't even like the word corruption, because then it kind of makes it seem like, oh, it's just these bad moral actors. No, it's the structure of the system incentivizes bad action. That if we're going to challenge, you know, like climate change, we're going to challenge this massive wealth and economic inequality, if we're going to challenge all the systems of war and the criminalization of migrants, we're going to have to do it by building power, the bottom up, and, you know, making people realize that they are being exploited, and that if they come together, they build these institutions, that's how they have a chance for their own future, for the future of their children, and for really a better world. Because the things that we have that are positive have been due to, you know, organized people on the ground, the labor movement, you know, the liberation movements, the civil rights movement. It's people coming together and fighting for the common good and really seizing power for themselves. And we have, you know, a lot of different, you know, websites that you can connect with. I don't know if, Kelly, you have anything in particular that you want people to check out, or any direct actions coming up that you'd like to speak about.
Yeah, for the Energy Democracy Alliance, New York statewide, including in New York City, energydemocracyny.org. We have a shiny new website coming out. So please come by, and there's always immediate actions that you can take there that are regularly updated around sort of the timing of a lot of the organizing around the Cuomo administration and local organizing as well. And then on social media, at least on Twitter, it's NY Energy Dem. And then with Symbiosis, symbiosis-revolution.org, and at Symbiosis Rev on Twitter, doing a lot of this sort of continental coordination around ecological and direct democratic institution building.
Yeah, and I think if we're going to address some of these crises, we definitely need to break down these silos that we're organizing in. And so next week, we're going to be talking about abolishing prisons. So we're going to go to a clip really quick from a very awesome protest that I was at that was combined activists who were fighting against the Williams pipeline and also fighting to abolish prisons.
No prisons, no pipelines. No prisons, no pipelines.
So that was from a picket outside of an event that Governor Cuomo was in. And also, we are looking for logo submissions. You know, we're democratic socialists. We want this to be a very democratic process. In addition to you all calling in and hearing your voices, we also want your art and your creativity to be a part of the show. So we're going to decide by the end of January. So by the end of this month, you can send a logo submissions to revolutionsnyc@gmail.com. And also to make sure to follow us on Twitter. We're at NYCRPM. Let us know what you know, if you're doing organizing on the ground, let us know. We want this to be a show that really covers what's happening in New York City. We want to hear from you. That's what democratic socialism is all about, you know?
Yeah, we're really looking forward to, you know, hearing some potential responses about why, you know, prison abolition and eco-socialism are at such a critical intersection and why we need to fight for these things at the same time. And then just last of all, if you want to show solidarity to the striking teachers out in Los Angeles, there's a solidarity fund at acceaction.org. That's acceaction.org. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI, listener-funded radio, 99.5 FM. And we're going to close out again with Solidarity Forever from our Singin' Solidarity DSA chorus, led by the Harlem-based singer Benita Oliver.
On the next Ecologic, Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen and other activists from national organizations will analyze the environmental aspects of the midterm elections. Tune in to Ecologic on Tuesday, January 15th at 8 p.m. to hear Ken Gale and Donna Stein discuss the impacts right here on WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
You're listening to WBAI. This is Kiani Brea with an announcement about your local station board elections. Ballots will be issued by first-class postal mail on January 18th and will be issued by email on January 23rd. The local station board election will close on March 5th, 2019. For other important dates and for information about voting in the election, you may call 413-424-9569 or visit wbai.org.
On Tuesday, January 15th at 10 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents a tribute to Miss Nancy Wilson. An abbreviated version of this program originally aired on March 8th, 2007, during International Working Women's Day programming. That's Tuesday, January 15th at 10 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
The WBAI Community Advisory Board will meet on Sunday, January 20th at 1 p.m. at the 60 Wall Street Atrium. All listeners are welcome to attend. Once again, the WBAI Community Advisory Board will meet on Sunday, January 20th at 1 p.m. at the 60 Wall Street Atrium. All listeners are welcome to attend.
Did you know there's an election coming up? On Tuesday, February 26th, New Yorkers will be able to go to the polls to select a new public advocate in a special election for one of just three citywide elected positions. This is Ben Max, co-host of Max and Murphy, right here on WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org, with Jarrett Murphy of City Limits. Listen to this week's Max and Murphy at 5 p.m. on Wednesday for more on the race for public advocate as we continue to interview candidates seeking to win the special election. That's 5 p.m. Wednesday right here on WBAI.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was Revolutions Per Minute, which is heard Tuesdays at 5 p.m. here on WBAI. Stay tuned for the WBAI Evening News coming up at 6 p.m., followed by Radio Gag, Gays Against Guns. That's at 6:30 p.m. 7 p.m. is First Voices Radio with Teokas and Ghost Horse. And this is a listener-sponsored community radio station where